Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. This is AB Dawji and this is The Big Picture, broadcasting simultaneously on Radio Islam and Radio Al Ansar. Yes, it's The Big Picture, your weekly dish of serious news analysis, spiced with a dose of healthy laughs and garnished with a few tight kicks up the backsides of delinquent, dirty, stinking, rogue, big shot politicians. Ahlan wa sahlan, how's it and all? Right. So, what have you been up to, eh? You working hard, eh? Or just parking at home? Too scared to go out. Marinating in front of the TV and getting on the froze nerves, eh? Me? Well, I have a full day. Yes, a full day, Habibi. About 18 hours. A full day of doing nothing. Hey, you know, I keep thinking to myself, hey, maybe I need to go to the mall and buy Elastoplast just in case I get cut sometime in the next couple of days. Let me check in the fridge to see how's the Danya stocks, eh? You know, it's a vital necessity in the home. And if we are down to just one bunch, I need to go out and get more as backup. And I think one of my car tires looks a bit low, a bit flat. Maybe I should go and to the filling station and get it checked. Hey, the macro paper says that there is a discount of 1 rand on Cadbury's chocolates. I think I'll rush out and get some slabs just in case they run out of stocks. So there you are, folks, racking my brains to get out and about. But then, like a hammer blow to the head, the sober statistics of 11 to 12,000 new infections are announced. And suddenly, I don't like Cadbury's chocolates anymore. Or the strange desire to go out and look for madumbis, eh? Madumbis. Yarr, I haven't had them for a while. Have you tried it? No? Also known as yams? Sure. Too lekker, eh? With a dash of salt. But I digress. Oh, yes, one more thing. Besides fetching the grandkids from madrasa, another highlight is going for a haircut. Yes, what a delight. Well, the only problem is that I have so little hair that I have to wait ages for it to look unkempt. I look in the mirror every day for the slightest sign of unruliness. And when I finally find a few stray hairs and announce that I'm going for a haircut, my sharp-tongued daughter will just say one word, why? And that would instantly end my excursion into the big, wide, exciting world. By the way, so speaking about hair and on to something that I touched on before, I have done some very serious research and observation of a certain physiological phenomenon. Yeah? Dear Bullies, I'm sure that you have noticed that the more your hairline recedes, meaning that the more you get bald, the hair in your nose and eyebrows seems to be growing faster. And you also get tufts of hair coming out of your ears. Very strange. Anyway, I decided to grow my eyebrows very long and comb them back over the bald patches on my head to get it like a Tony Curtis hairstyle. Anyone remember him? No? Okay. So am I slowly going cronk in my self-imposed lockdown? I call my sister Shireen regularly. She's in Iddat. And I tell her, you know what? I understand completely how you feel locked up there in the flat. One fellow I know is slowly losing it. He's too scared to go out. He told me that he was talking about this to the microwave and toaster. And they agreed that things were getting bad. And he said, I didn't mention it to the washing machine because she puts a different spin on things. And the vacuum cleaner told me to very straight to suck it all up. But the fan was optimistic, saying that it will all blow over very soon. The toilet looked a bit flushed, but said nothing. The front door said that I was becoming unhinged. And the doorknob said, hey, get a grip, okay? And you know what the curtain said? You know what the curtain said? They said, I must pull myself together. Can you believe it? Well, there you are, listeners. This motor has got it very bad. I'm not quite there yet, but you know what? What I like about modern technology is that cars have Bluetooth connectivity. Bluetooth connectivity, meaning that while you are driving, you can speak hands-free via the car's mic and speaker system. It's so wonderful because even when I don't get a call, I am busy talking to myself and people think that I'm on the phone. And now, dear listeners, I want to pose something of a dilemma to you. Dear sisters, this is for you. Here's the question. Do you want a man who earns lots of money but doesn't help with the chores at home? That's housework. Or do you want a man who just earns enough just to make ends meet but helps you with the cleaning and dusting and all the other stuff that you do? Do you want a guy who earns lots and pots of money but doesn't help you? Or a guy who earns just enough to get by and he helps you at home? Well, here's something to consider. This is an article I read yesterday. Married men who don't help out around the house tend to bring home bigger paychecks than husbands who play a bigger role on the domestic chores front, according to a study. The study led by University of Notre Dame in Indiana, the United States, showed that disagreeable men are less helpful with domestic work, enabling them to preserve more time and energy at home, which they can invest into their work and earn more. And these findings were published in the journal called Personnel Psychology. Personnel Psychology. Hey, so there you are. Dilemma for you, sisters. And here's some more useless information. Dear listeners, these days the lighties all have their heads down, busy with their cell phones, even at the supper table, busy in their own worlds. A nice, good clap is required here. Nice, good clap, sound clap is required. No. I don't mean that you must clap the lighties, okay? You need to clap Tim Berners-Lee. That's right. Tim Berners-Lee. Why are you raising your eyebrows, Mota? You don't know who he is? That's very, very strange, because until yesterday, I also didn't know who he was. Tim Berners-Lee is the inventor of the World Wide Web. Yep, you notice that all websites start with www. Well, this Tim character invented that way back in 1989. He is a London-born computer scientist, and his invention of the World Wide Web changed the world forever. I'm sure you'll agree with that sentiment. Changed the world forever. He formulated what is known as the original source code in 1918. I don't know what that means, but he invented the original source code in 1989. And he's now putting it up for auction. Putting this original source code up for auction. And the starting bid, in case you are interested, is $1,000, which is about 14,000 rands. His invention is seen as revolutionizing the sharing and creation of information in what is regarded as one of the most significant inventions since the printing press appeared in Europe in the 15th century. So, all you mamus out there, join the auction and get yourself a piece of absolutely amazing history. And now let's get to weighty matters, the meat and potatoes, serious stuff. And for that, we cross over to the good old US of A. Ladies and gentlemen, the 46th President of the United States, Joseph Robinette Biden. Joseph Robinette Biden Jr. Dear listeners, I bet you didn't know his name is Joseph Robinette Biden Jr. What kind of name is Robinette? Robinette, is that a small bird? A small robin? A Robinette? yeah. Anyway, since he entered the White House, every speech he made is like a broken record. America is back. America is back. We stand for American values. American values. Well, I can understand what he means. America is back, meaning America is back from the clutches of that badam dude deprived clown, a badda, ullu, mampara all rolled into a big fat laddu with a misty wisp of sutterfinny hair floating above his silly head, a puffed up Elvis Presley lookalike gone bad. A gas bag. So yes, the world was laughing at America, and now America is back, meaning back to sense and sensibility. Or maybe not. Okay, I get that one. America is back. But what is Biden on about when he speaks of American values? What's that all about? Which reminds me of a sharp answer that Mahatma Gandhi gave to a journalist. The journalist asked him, "So, Mr. Gandhi, what do you think about Western values? What do you think of Western values?" And Gandhiji replied, "I think it would be a good idea." I think it would be a good idea. Did you get it, Mota? Never mind, your fro will explain it to you later. And so, I'm also wondering, what values is Biden speaking about? Let's just turn a blind eye to the Holocaust. Let's just leave that aside. The Holocaust of the Native Americans when the white men came to that land and massacred them. Of course, in the movies, they referred to as Red Indians. And more than 20 million were massacred. 20 million! But that was a long time ago. And I'm sure America became more civilized after that and developed better values. Better values. But wait, hang on. Then came slavery from around 1776. For a whole century, 100 years, America brutalized black people it brought from Africa. Incidentally, why is tomorrow, that is Sunday, known as Juneteenth? Juneteenth. All right, put your hands up. One at a time, please. One at a time. Don't shout. Wow. You all know the answer, which is, of course, on the 19th of June, 1865, the last enslaved black people got the news that slavery was over. 19th of June, 1865. That news of freedom came to them in Galveston, Texas. Remember that, ladies? Just when the bully got his mouth full of acne at lunch, casually tell him about Joe Biden signing on Wednesday, officially declaring the 19th, that Sunday, as a public holiday, tomorrow as a public holiday to commemorate the ending of slavery. 19th of June, 1865 was when it ended. Well, in casual language, it's known as Juneteenth holiday. June 19th equals Juneteenth. June plus 19th equals Juneteenth. Remember that, right? And the bully will be looking at you sideways for the rest of the week. Hey, how she knows all that, man. Let's leave that and go fast forward to more American values. Wow. And yes, Guantanamo Bay. What a lovely place. Lovely beaches, excellent weather. A great place for a holiday. I think that's going to be the next destination for my group. Hey, are you ready? Are your bags half packed? Hey, people are getting fed up, man. As I told you, one Bali phoned me and he said, man, please, please, just park a plane at Oa Tambo and we'll all come there. Don't tell us where we're going. Just take us anywhere, man. Bali was getting crunk. Well, Guantanamo Bay is a part of Cuba, which the United States has occupied since 1903. And then, of course, as you know, it built a big detention camp there, a gulag. You know what's a gulag? Described as a gulag by many people, commentators, and many commentators say it's a total disgrace to what America stands for. Gulag, what the Soviet Union had in Siberia, where it locked up people. And, well, since 2002, it's one of the ugliest places on earth. After the September 11, 2001 attack on the Twin Towers, the United States captured people from all over the world and accused them of involvement in the attack. So, they were taken to America to be given a fair trial. They took them to Guantanamo Bay. 780 of them into a legal void. Legal void. No trial, nothing, no justice. They were treated like animals. No. Let me correct myself. They were treated worse than animals. Tortured in the most horrific manner. No trial equals no justice equals American values. George Bush and Donald Trump, what did I say there? That man is stuck in my head. George Bush and Donald Rumsfeld. You remember this character, Donald Rumsfeld? Well, they labeled these detainees as the most dangerous people in the world. Most dangerous people in the world. After 11 years in torture chambers, they were very quietly released, most of them. Most of them have now been released. No trial, nothing at all. 73-year-old Saifullah Paracha has been cleared for release. He was cleared for release last month after spending 16 years at Guantanamo Detention Center on suspicion of ties to Al-Qaeda. Suspicion of ties. This old man was locked up. 16 years he spent there. Uthman Abdulrahim, a Yemeni, was held without charge since January 2002. Well, he's also just been cleared for release. Just cleared for release, but that doesn't automatically mean that he can leave the place. Some of them have been cleared years ago, but are still there. So this Uthman Abdulrahim was there from 2002. 19 years he spent there. 19 years of their lives just deleted while suffering torture and deprivation. Away from their families, away probably from their children. Who can put a price on that, being away from the family and locked up and being tortured, eh? Hey, how can you be compensated? American justice, American values. And you know, 40 inmates, 40 detainees still remain at Guantanamo. So 780 labeled as enemy combatants by George Bush. And then over the years, quietly released and sent all over the world. Whichever countries. Countries are not prepared to accept. Many countries are not prepared to accept them because they have been labeled as terrorists. Although they are cleared, people are afraid to take them in. And these are innocent boys and men. Yes, even boys were incarcerated there. And men. Did George Bush and Donald Trump face any kind of repercussions for wrongfully destroying the lives of these innocent people? They did something even worse, these characters. They bombed Iraq to smithereens in 2003 on the false manufactured lie that Saddam possessed weapons of mass destruction. Almost a million Iraqis were killed in the invasion and conflict in the first 3 to 5 years of this war on Iraq. Every time I say these things, I remember being there and the horror of being there. Almost a million Iraqis were killed in the invasion. Iraq never recovered from that destruction. You know, it was one of the most advanced countries in the Middle East. I don't want to go into that. One of the most free healthcare, free education. You go to university, you do your PhD, you get a Mercedes-Benz. It was very, very advanced. And today, it's almost a failed state. George Bush, Dick Cheney, Colin Powell, Donald Rumsfeld destroyed the whole country and its people based on outright lies. Were these people tried and sentenced for this huge crime? American values mean that you can do anything and nothing will happen to you. Nothing will happen to you. Ah, yes, I forgot to tell you about the crime of the century. The crime of the century. Hiroshima and Nagasaki. The atomic bomb dropped on Hiroshima instantly killed 140,000 of Hiroshima's 350,000 population. Just about half. Killed. Murdered. And 74,000 died in Nagasaki instantly. American values, dear people. American values. And the great American thinker, an icon, a super intellectual and writer, Professor Noam Chomsky, said that America is the leading terrorist state in the world. That, dear listeners, sums up what America's real values are. Values of going around the world acting with total impunity. The world's self-proclaimed policeman. I say all these things and I wonder why they didn't give me a visa. They say the visa is still pending. I think about 5 years now. Pending. And so 3.8 billion rands is donated. Sorry, $3.8 billion is donated to Israel by America, most of which is for military use, meaning the killing of Palestinians. That's the values. Support occupation, support the brutality, the killing of children. Render Gaza to a wasteland. Turn a blind eye to international law, the Geneva Conventions, human rights and justice. Stand up and support apartheid Israel. That's American values. Yes, Joe Robinette Biden, Joseph Robinette Biden, America is back with its values of double standards, hypocrisy, coercion, blackmail, the bully of the world. But what about Biden's own values? We spoke about American, but what about his own value, personal values? Hear this. When Biden was standing for elections against Donald Trump for president, Joe Biden called Saudi Arabia a pariah state with a government, in his words, of no redeeming social values. That means nothing can save it from its social values. No redeeming. He even charged that the kingdom's flashy crown prince, Mohammed bin Salman, had masterminded the murder and gruesome dismemberment and chopping up of Jamal Khashoggi. Biden vowed if elected as president, not to sell weapons, more weapons to the Saudis. He said, they have to be held accountable. We are going to make them pay the price and make them, in fact, the pariah that they are, pariah state. We're going to make them pay the price. Wow. Tough words from Joe Biden when he was standing for elections. Well, arms sales to the Saudis are still going on and Yemen is still being bombed, and not a squeak from Biden about Mohammed bin Salman. Not a squeak. Ah, yes, also American values means promoting democracy, justice and freedom. But MBS, Mohammed bin Salman, has been merrily locking up people or beheading them while his hitmen, the murderers of Khashoggi, have been secretly tried and found to be innocent, and they're just roaming around Maja. Wonderful, isn't it? And when the whole world proposed a resolution last month calling for a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas, the United States vetoed it three times. Biden was very quiet for a while, but eventually said, Israel has a right to defend itself. Values, Habibi, values. Okay, let's park this subject because I can go on the whole day with a historic list, a list of Israel's, of America's wonderful interventions in other countries to make the world a better place. Dear people, you know, I like you. Yeah, I like you. Today, I was going to speak a great deal about the situation in Palestine. Some good news, a new angle, big things. That's what I was going to talk. The unraveling of the Zionist project. The slipping slide of Israel in a downward trajectory. The slip sliding of Israel in a downward trajectory. The politics of unintended consequence. Big things. And good news also. But you know what? You know what? I said it before, and I'll say it again. I'm fed up with you lot. Fed up with you. Yes, ekdam cross. Why? Because you never listen. You never listen. That's right. One day when I'm not around, then you will sit and think. How many times have you heard that from your parents? Eh? And how many times have you said that to your children? One day when I'm not around, you will sit and listen. Wrong. One day when I'm not around, then you will sit and think. Those are the words. Why must you sit and think? Why not when you're standing or walking or anything like that? Anyway, let's get serious, okay? If I told you today that for lunch I'll be having Russian goulash, what kind of impact will that have on you? Maybe zero, nothing at all, right? But if I told you that I will be having lekker creamy soji followed by steaming basmati rice biryani with mutton that just melts in the mouth, with saffron red and yellow fried potatoes that just fall apart with the touch of the fork, releasing its steam and all gently bathed in tangy dahi, alongside with crispy papar and a treasure trove of salad of baby cucumbers and fresh lettuce, olives, pineapple and bits of feta cheese, all garnished with tangy French dressing, and some veg achar and a tall glass of fresh fruit cocktail filled with ice. Good heavens, that will get your salivas working, yes? Hey? Well, I can tell you my stomach is growling here now. I have to go out and get some lack of mutton beer. Anyway, what's that got to do with the price of butter? I hear you ask. Yeah, in fact, have you checked the price of butter? Eh? And the cooking oil. Whoa! But I digress again. So my point is this. You don't know Russian goulash, but you can clearly identify with lamb biryani. So weeks and weeks and weeks and years, I've been pleading with you with tears in my eyes. Please, please, look at the map of Palestine. Just get the map and see where the various places are. How will you know what I'm speaking about if you don't know where is Israel, where is the West Bank, where is Jerusalem, where is Gaza, that Lebanon is on Israel's northern border and Jordan on the east and Syria on the northeast and Egypt in the south? I'm speaking about all these places. Nothing I say can really make sense unless you examine a map. So next week, there's much to discuss. I was going to discuss that today. Next week, there's much to discuss. So to make sense of it all, I want you to please print a map of Israel. Do it today. Don't leave it for next Friday and start scrambling. Ask the lighty to do it and then examine it. Sit with it. Look at all the various countries surrounding Israel and see where is the West Bank and Gaza and East Jerusalem. Right? Let me warn you. Khabardar, if you don't have the map in front of you next week, you will have to write 100 lines and stand in the corner, okay? Or even worse. You know, with the modern technology that we have here in the studio, if you don't have the map, I can just press a few buttons and I can switch this channel off on your radio. Watch out. Don't play with me, Brazo. I'm a killer. Right. So since you don't have a map, let me deal with broad issues, some issues very broadly. You may have heard the expression, one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter. One man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter. It's absolutely remarkable, the parallels between apartheid South Africa and apartheid Israel. Listen to this. Both Margaret Thatcher and U.S. President Ronald Reagan accused Mandela and the ANC of being communists and terrorists in the 1980s. And Reagan's administration even placed Mandela and the ANC on a terrorist watch list. The US and UK leaders considered South Africa's apartheid regime to be a Cold War ally and opposing the ANC to be an enemy bent on spreading communism. Reagan said in a 1986 speech, "The South African government is under no obligation to negotiate the future of the country with any organization that proclaims a goal of creating a communist state and uses terrorist tactics and violence to achieve it." And Thatcher said this, "A considerable number of the ANC leaders are communists. When the ANC says that they will target British companies, this shows what a typical terrorist organization it is." And then, of course, Dick Cheney defended voting against a 1986 Congress bill urging South Africa to release Mandela because, in his words, the ANC was then viewed as a terrorist organization. In the mid-80s, a member of the British Parliament named Terry Dick said, "Nelson Mandela should be shot." And he said, "How much longer will the Prime Minister allow herself to be kicked in the face by this black terrorist?" Well, in addition to maligning Mandela and the ANC, Ronald Reagan actively praised South Africa's apartheid regime. In 1981, he told Walter Cronkite, a famous TV personality, he told him, "South Africa was a country that has stood by us in every war we've ever fought, a country that is strategically is essential to the free world in its production of minerals." Well, when people look back in history, how will they regard Margaret Thatcher and Ronald Reagan? Thatcher was called the Iron Lady. Well, that image has already rusted away. And Ronald Reagan, the Hollywood actor, how will they think of him in history in the years to come? Well, not much. Maybe just a footnote in history. But Mandela, well, the world regards him as a towering icon of truth and justice, a tireless fighter for human rights and the dignity of man, a symbol of the freedom struggle, a giant amongst men. You agree? Of course you do. So one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter. And the similarity with apartheid Israel is there. The British took over Palestine in 1918 after the First World War. Immediately, Jews from Europe poured into Palestine with the singular aim to chase out the British and subjugate the Palestinians and take over their land. These Jews were well armed. They attacked the British and the Palestinians. They planted bombs and all kinds of things. The British put wanted posters all over, wanted posters for these terrorists all over Palestine for these Zionists. Listen to this. Menachem Begin, who held the job as Prime Minister in the late 1970s and early 80s, David Ben-Gurion and Yitzhak Rabin had an earlier career as hardcore terrorists. As leader of the Irgun group during World War II, Begin conducted a campaign of attacks focused principally on British government and police targets intended to drive the British out of Palestine. Begin's terrorist campaigns was most spectacular. It was a spectacular operation, and that was the bombing of the King David Hotel in Jerusalem in 1986, killing 91 persons and injuring 46, most of them civilians. As the British exit neared, Begin's group used more of its terrorist tactics against the Palestinians, evidently aimed in part to terrorize Arabs into fleeing their homes and villages. And especially notorious operation was the massacre in the village of Deir Yassin, in which more than 100 Arabs or Palestinians, including women and children, were killed. Begin's successor as Prime Minister, Yitzhak Shamir, had a similar history. He was co-leader of another Jewish terrorist group of the 1940s known as Lehi, also known as the Stern Gang after its founder, which was considered even more extreme than the Irgun. Besides also participating in the Deir Yassin massacres, Shamir's group specialized in assassinations, including a murder in Cairo in 1944 of the British Minister of State responsible for the Middle East. In September 1948, the group assassinated the Swedish diplomat and the United Nations mediator for Palestine, who was actually going there to make peace between the Zionists and the Palestinians, and he was murdered. But hang on, this is a very important question, were the Zionists terrorists or freedom fighters? A freedom fighter is one who is living on the land for centuries and fights a foreign invader who invades his land and tries to subjugate him. That's why the African people, through the African National Congress and other groups, fought against European colonialism. They fought against European colonialism. And so these Zionists were from Europe and they came to colonize, to drive the local people of the land. So clearly they were terrorists, not freedom fighters. And so by May 1948, they drove the British out and chased half of the Palestinians from their land. And then they created what is known as 78% created Israel on 78% of what was historic Palestine. Right, and so these terrorists who were now internationally recognized, especially by Western powers as the government of a legitimate state, they in turn labeled the Palestinians who were fighting for their freedom as terrorists. Israel declared these freedom fighters as terrorists, these Palestinians. Yasser Arafat and his PLO were called terrorists, until he accepted a wishy-washy, fraudulent, silly deal in 1993, the Oslo Accords, and then they also gave him the Nobel Prize. So he was not called a terrorist anymore because he put down his weapons and came back to accept that lousy deal. The group that still resisted the occupation and still does so, Hamas, was declared a terrorist group. 1987-88. Israel with its enabler, its bodyguard, and that's the United States, pressured the world to designate, to label Hamas as a terrorist organization. But for most Palestinians and many around the world, Hamas militants are regarded as freedom fighters. Well, there you are, folks. It's a game of politics. Noam Chomsky called the United States a terrorist state. Israel has been terrorizing the Palestinians for over 70 years. Very few label it a terrorist state. But watch this space or listen to the program Habibi. Next week, we'll unpack the whole issue of the unraveling of the Zionist project. Ha! Ha! And this is the last warning to you, listeners. The map from the internet better be in front of you next week, Saturday. Okay? And now, ladies and gentlemen, from the graveyard of the light at the end of the tunnel, let's see what we got for you. You know, if you are parking at home and feeling a little bit depressed and doing some comfort eating and looking a bit bulky, maybe looking, shall I say, mashallah, here's something you can use to respond to people who call you a fatty. We all get heavier as we get older because there's a lot more information in our heads. So I'm not fat, I'm just really intelligent. And my head couldn't hold any more, so it started filling up the rest of me. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Right, let's see what else we got for you from the graveyard of the light at the end of the tunnel. Right, but first, some words of wisdom. And this is from the Director General of Euro Exim Bank Limited. And he got economists thinking about what he said. And his topic was, the bicycle is the slow death of the planet. The bicycle is the slow death of the planet. And here's what he said. A cyclist is a disaster for the country's economy. He does not buy cars and does not borrow money to buy. He does not pay for insurance policies. He does not buy fuel, does not pay for the necessary maintenance and repairs. He does not use paid parking. He does not cause serious accidents. He does not require multi-lane highways. He does not get fat. Healthy people are neither needed nor useful for the economy. They don't buy medicine. They do not go to hospitals or doctors. Nothing is added to the country's GDP, the gross domestic product. On the contrary, every new McDonald's restaurant creates at least 30 jobs, 10 cardiologists, 20 dentists, 10 dietary experts and nutritionists, and obviously people who work at the restaurant itself. Choose carefully, cyclist or McDonald's. It is worth considering. And the final word, walking is even worse. Pedestrians don't even buy bicycles. What do you think of those words of wisdom, eh? Right, let's quickly go to another one. A loving husband's plan for the 50th wedding anniversary. At a mosque in London, during a marriage seminar for husbands, the imam asked Abdullah, who was approaching his 50th wedding anniversary, to share some insight into how he had managed to stay married to the same woman all these years. And Abdullah told the assembled husbands, "Well, I've tried to treat her nice, spend money on her, and best of all, I took her to Islamabad for our 25th wedding anniversary." "Hey," the imam responded, "Abdullah, you are an amazing inspiration to all the husbands here. Please tell us what you are planning for your wife for your 50th anniversary." And Abdullah proudly replied, "I am going back to Islamabad to pick her up." Okay, we got a few minutes. Let's see what we got. A drunk man who smelled like beer sat on a subway bench next to a priest. The man's tie was stained, his face was plastered with red lipstick, and a half-empty bottle of gin was sticking out of his torn coat pocket. And so this guy, he opened his newspaper and began reading. After a few minutes, the man turned to the priest and asked, "Say, Father, what causes arthritis?" The priest replied, "My son, it's caused by loose living, being with cheap, wicked women, too much alcohol, contempt for your fellow man, sleeping around with prostitutes, and lack of a bath." And the drunk guy muttered in response, "Well, I'll be damned." And then he turned and kept on reading a newspaper. The priest, thinking about what he had said, nudged the man and apologized. "I'm very sorry, I didn't mean to come on so strong. How long have you had arthritis?" And the drunk answered, "I don't have it, Father. I was just reading here in the paper that the Pope does." And the moral of the story is, make sure you understand the question before offering the answer. Here's a final one. We've got 1 minute left. The boy calls 911, emergency line. "Hello, I need your help." And 911 says, "All right, what is it?" And the boy says, "Two girls are fighting over me." And 911 says, "So what's your emergency?" And the boy says, "The ugly one is winning." A bus full of housewives goes on a picnic and crashes with no survivors. Each husband cried for a week, but one husband continued for more than 2 weeks. When asked why he was crying so much, he replied, "My wife missed the bus." Well, time is up. This is A.B. Dauji bidding you all. And before I do that, don't forget the map, okay? Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.